Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We're all about the Mat-Su today. The borough has a brand new mayor, top 10 and top 5 finisher in the Iditarod, Yukon Quest victor, local businessman Vern Halter. The Valley is still one of the fastest growing boroughs in the state. Per capita, it is the fastest growing. It's also an area with great rural pockets, a vibrant dog mushing community, the home to former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, who literally put Wasilla on the national map. But of course, there are issues and challenges, growth despite a declining oil economy, a ferry that never really had a schedule, plans for a rail line to Port McKenzie, dreams of a canoe bridge that is probably unlikely in our current economic climate. The place is not short on ambition and residents, but does it have the capacity to sustain its growth in today's economy? That's our show today. Here to share their insights and ambitions for the borough are Vern Halter. Welcome, Vern.
Good afternoon, everybody.
New mayor by couple of weeks,
well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Nice to be here.
Early October, right, is when you...
Yeah. 10 days.
10 days. Okay. New to the job, but not green. Not green. Okay. And we also have Patty Sullivan in the studio with us. Patty and I, we're gonna have a little old home week here. Vern and I talk about how we met, and Patty and I used to work for the Once Upon a Time Anchorage Daily News.
That's right.
And then you moved on to radio. So this is a little home week for Patty to come back into
KSK. That's right, public radio.
Yeah, so she's just, you know, she's got it all down, and she's going to coach us all here through the show. So welcome. And you are the Director of Public Information for the Mat-Su Borough.
Yes, and PIO during disasters.
Right. Which sometimes happen, as we'll talk about on the show.
We had a big one this summer, Sockeye Fire.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to talk about that. Now, you don't work for Vern.
I think I do.
In your mind, you do.
Technically, she doesn't. She works for the borough.
Right.
And I work for the borough manager.
I was thinking you work for them. Yes, we're going to get into what is the sort of manager style. But we do want to invite our guests or our listeners to feel free to call in either with questions or comments about the Mat-Su. You may have questions. I mean, we live in Anchorage. We go there. We recreate there. We pass through there. But we don't always know all that much about the Mat-Su. So we welcome your calls. And you can give us a jingle at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And we can also take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So to start off, I want to introduce people to Vern. So let's do our old home week thing first. Vern and I go back to 1982. In former lives of ours.
Iditarod Trail.
I think I was working for the Nome Nugget at the time. I worked for them for 10 months, and they gave me $200 and a plane ticket to Anchorage and said, do what you can. And it was fabulous. We managed to get on an airplane together, a little tiny airplane.
Right. It was kind of surreal. I was a young magistrate judge out in Dutch Harbor, Alaska, and I was following David Munson and Susan Butcher on the Iditarod Trail. So I was checkpoint hopping in that race and ran in and met you.
And I was trying to cover the race with a 1 week deadline. I mean, what are you going to, it's not the same as, it's not a horse race when you're riding once a week, right? But it was great. And I got to see it. It was fun.
It was my first really in-depth look at the Iditarod, you know, from checkpoint to checkpoint and at the finish line. And of course, Susan Butcher, you know, the best of the best. We're following her. And a lot of people don't know this. David Munson, her husband, and of course, we all know Susan's passed away now, but sure. David and I grew up in South Dakota, went to law school together, and drove to Alaska together. So that was my connection.
Yeah. How many stories do you hear of people who came up for the summer? That's what you said just before the show. Came up for the summer, and now here we are 35 years later or whatever. What was it? It was probably a grand driving adventure to get up here.
It was. It was, you know, 3,000-4,000 miles to arrive up here. You know, and I don't know if we really planned on staying in Alaska, you know, totally. You know, we knew we were coming up for the summer. You know, I think maybe I always thought I'd wind up back in the Dakotas or Minnesota as a young lawyer. But I got a job about mid-August here in Alaska.
You were just putting out a few feelers?
Went into an attorney at a volleyball match and went and saw him the next morning, and 2 days later, I was hired.
You had a job.
And
wow.
I had a job. So
yeah, I noticed on something I read, maybe your bio or something, you had attorney for about 10 years, and you put in capital letters, part-time. What was that about?
Well, I think that's when my public defender days. I was actually a public defender of the state of Alaska for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And
I was
working half the year, six months at a time, usually April 1st to Halloween. And I was in places like Kotzebue. I lived in Kotzebue. And then I'd take the winter off in Dogmush.
Yeah.
And that really worked well for me. So, yeah. And yeah. I think that's where that part time comes from. And
yeah, I'm sure that I thought that's the only way you could have developed your skills as a dog musher.
And put my wife Susan through vet school doing air that year time I was in Kotzebue. And
that's great. And that's so you've lived in a lot of places in this.
Great. Yeah, I have. And I worked in Valdez as a public defender and had in Palmer. That was my first 5 years in Palmer.
Wow.
And of course, Dutch Harbor in Alaska is a magistrate. And and district court judge. And I was actually coroner out there, too, which was kind of a surprise to me.
Say that again?
Coroner.
For the coroner.
Coroner, right.
Okay.
I didn't know I was a coroner either.
Extra duties as aside.
Exactly.
Right. Wow. So were there cases that you had?
We had a lot of presumptive deaths back in those days because that was King Crab. Oh. I went out there in 1978, so that was King Crab, the height of the King Crab boom.
Wow.
And so we had missing sailors and missing fishermen have to convene jurors to decide presumptive death certificates. And
oh, that's grim.
Very sad.
That's grim. So you have lived all over the state and you chose the Mat-Su.
I've always been in the Mat-Su. Even when I was living in Kotzebue, I'd come back. My wife Susan and I had a place up in Trapper Creek, was home to the kennel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'd come back in the winter. And so, the Mat-Su has been home for
close to
38, 40 years.
Yeah.
And even though it was kind of part-time, and then it's always, I moved from Trapper Creek down to Willow, and we finally sold our Trapper Creek place 4 or 5 years ago. And that was a sad day because it was off the grid, off the road. You'd produce your own power and
truly
firewood.
Alaskan experience.
Yeah, propane lights and propane refrigerators. Yeah.
Did you feel like you were getting soft?
It is. I loved it out there. And Willow kind of is the heart and soul of dog mushing in the Mat-Su Borough and probably the state of Alaska, too. So best trail systems in the world, some of the best kennels.
Right, right. And you had some, that legislation you just got through, the Mushers' Rights. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, that was, I kind of went through the state first. They had a state resolution that the governor signed about the right to mush.
Mm-hmm.
And then the borough has always had dogs codified, animal care and health and welfare. But there was never a mention of a sled dog. There was never a definition of a sled dog. There was never a definition of a kennel or racing dogs and the things that go along, training and things like that. So we put a separate section in the Mat-Su Borough Code, Title 24, specifically addressing sled dogs and standards of care. Our standards of care are higher than Pride and some of the other standards of care that are out in the United States. And then we have some protections, too, like interference with lawful mushing activities is codified now.
Mm-hmm.
And, we do make noise and commotion, and so that's mentioned in the statute that's if you're moving into a kennel.
Beware.
Beware. Mm-hmm. And we don't want kennels moving into a subdivision. Of course, that's just the opposite, and that wouldn't be allowed either.
Right, right. And so at the start of the show, I was saying there's no zoning. I was asking, is there zoning? Well, here's an example of it is a form of you're trying to prepare people.
Right.
This is the environment. If you're interested in this area, this is part of what's here, and this is what we want to maintain.
And so it's basically a separate license within the. You have to have a dog license in the borough, and always have had to have one, and you had to have a kennel license for many, many years, and so this would just be a separate way of licensing a active sled dog kennel that wants to be under this status.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. But. Would you guess how many teams are out there? I mean, do you have any kind of a census?
We moved 1,000 sled dogs in the Sockeye Fire.
Wow.
1,000 in just this little, 7,000 acres?
Yes.
And 56 homes burned, and we moved 1,000 sled dogs out of that area that afternoon, Sunday night, a huge effort. And there's always been 15, 16 racers in the Iditarod that are from the Mat-Su Borough.
Yeah.
Of course, Martin Boozer, champion. Dallas Seavey, a current champion, lives right down the road about 10 miles from where I do in Willow now.
Yeah.
Dee Dee Johnroe. I don't even know how many races Dee Dee has done. Probably 30, 35 Iditarods.
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
And she signed up to go again this year, and she's rebuilding her house under the Sockeye Fire.
Incredible. It's incredible.
I don't know where she gets all the energy.
It's amazing. There must be something in the water out in the Mat-Su.
Well, that's something
grit.
About our sport.
Grit.
Probably the toughest sport in the world. Men and women compete equally.
Yeah.
That's something I've always been proud of.
Which is cool.
That is cool. That's the coolest really thing on earth.
Yeah.
Every man should be beaten by a woman on the Iditarod Trail at some point.
Good for your character.
Yeah, it is. It's fun.
And I guess, they have special skill sets they bring to this, too, and also lightweight and a lot of things that they...
I think it's just everybody's head. I think, it really comes down to your heart and your head and your determination, and men and women are equal on that plane.
Yeah.
That's what it stands for.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
I'm hoping that we're going to get snow with all that mushing and... I mean, it's really solidified there. And
it's amazing in Alaska. We have to hope we're going to get snow.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's repeating itself every once in a while. But we have 2 inches in Willow right now.
Right, which you really can't mush on, can you?
No, it's a little light, you know.
Yeah, it's too soft, yeah. And Vern, your actual competing mushing days are over.
Yes, I would say so. I'm 66.
Yeah.
I could probably take a dog team to Nome quite easily, you know, on the dead rod and get there.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever see the top 20, top 10 ever again.
And
you probably
what
wish
you're
you
doing.
Can. And every once in a while, I wake up in the middle of the night and I get this romantic feeling that I'm going to win again. And
you know, the Rick Swensons, some of them are, still.
We had dinner with Martin Boozy the other night. You know, I think he's 58. It would be fun to see a 60-year-old win the Iditarod. That'd be a new statement.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, because the new 50s, 30 now, and all that stuff.
Right.
But somebody to win the Iditarod at 60, which I think could happen.
Right.
Just judging, you know, Jeff King and Martin Boozer. And and so that would really be a statement.
Well, the other thing you were saying was a senior division, maybe?
Well, that's a whole different kind of
a... Or mushing masters.
You know, that's where senior division, 2 or 3 24-hour breaks. And
all
the help you could have at the checkpoints. And
a steak dinner every night.
Yeah,
right?
Senior purse.
Right.
So everything
everything's special for you. Well, you know...
That won't happen, by the way.
It isn't going to happen.
But fantasy
it's just
world
a fantasy
for
world
me.
For us. So, but anyway, and one more mushing question, comparing the Yukon Quest with the Iditarod. Could you just share a little bit about
that? Well, the Yukon Quest is, you know, I love that race. I'm a Yukon Quest champion. It was, you know, the difference really is the number of checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got 16, 18 checkpoints in Iditarod. So they're pretty close together and you have a flow to that.
Yeah.
And then you get out in the Yukon Quest and there's 6 or 7 and it's...
Hello.
Holy hello. And then it's, you're... You know, and there's not much out there either for villages or towns along
you're really,
the way.
Really
you know, you're
going to
go to Dawson, obviously, halfway, and then Eagle, and after that, it's pretty sparse.
Yeah.
And it is rough country.
Yeah. And you won that.
I won that.
What do you think was going on there that you won that one, and you've been a top 10 and top 5 finisher in the Iditarod?
I think it was a really great dog team that year.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dog team. My wife ran it as a 2-year-old team the year before she went to vet school, and I ran it the next year. And we ran a good race, 6th or 7th, I think I was finished. But then that team, 4, 5, 6, and 7, they were just virtually unbeatable. And in 12, 14 dog team, I think 10 out of 12 of them were leaders. One litter of 8, there were 7 of them in that team.
Wow.
It was just such a dominant. It was a Susan Butcher crossover.
Right.
Rough
right.
to Sadie was my famous dog. Sadie was Granite's full sister.
Oh, wow.
So it was just one of those unique circumstances.
That's so cool. It's great to hear you talk about it, actually. Mm-hmm. It's just fun to hear you talk about it.
And it's fun. You know, Jeff King had beaten me by a few minutes the year before. And I guess every once in a while people say I could be... You know, get determined, and I really was determined to beat him.
Well, congratulations on all of that. I mean, and then the care of the dogs all those years too. Really, really, really.
We have a beautiful place in Willow. It's just a state of the art, huge.
It's called Dream the Dream.
Dream the Dream Dog Farm, which was a corporate thing. I was sponsored by Wells Fargo, and I did school programs and in the Dakotas. We saw 500,000 kids and students in a period of 10, 12 years, so they thought of that as a way to promote it.
Yeah. So are you still doing that as a business now?
Well, I still have the kennel going actively. We were talking earlier about summer tourism. I've really seen a growth of summer tourism last 7, 8, 10 years and look forward to that every summer, hosting groups from all over the world. And
so people are booking with you now? Huh?
They are booking heavily
Is there an Alaska advantage like there is for
get a discount? Senior discount and Alaska discount. We could talk about that if they call.
I'm kidding. No. But really, now you're here because you're the mayor.
Right, we're here
because of Mat-Su. And I did say to Patty and you, let's talk a little bit about the Mat-Su because, you know, I read some of the material on the fabulous Mat-Su Borough website, which I found so useful. I don't know, Patty, if you were responsible, but it's fun to read. There's, okay, 2 of you here to responsible for it. And the Mat-Su is about the size of Ireland?
Nearly the size of Ireland, yeah.
Nearly the size of
25,000 square miles.
And there's cities in there. Let's talk about the elements that make up the borough.
Well, the cities, you know, we have 3. You know, we have Palmer, Wasilla, and Houston, a smaller city. There are 3 cities. And then we have, Patty, can you help me? I don't know how many community councils, but I'm guessing 18 to 20, 22 community councils spread out all over.
Yeah.
And we talk about Ireland, and it's really about the size of West Virginia.
Yeah.
If we put it in state size. And so it's a big land mass. all the population, or not all of the population, but a significant portion of it, it's from like Palmer over to Houston, mm-hmm. and then headed south down into Kinnick, Goose Bay area. Mm-hmm. And I think Kinnick Goose Bay is the fourth largest city in the state of Alaska right now.
Wait, Kinnick Goose Bay is a city?
It's not a community.
We're a community,
okay. but the population, if you were to compare it to like a city, it'd be the fourth largest in the state of Alaska.
Wow.
So it is not a city.
Right.
So don't get me wrong.
Now,
there,
is that people thinking that there's going to be a bridge and they're
no,
moving
it's
there?
Or housing.
Housing.
It's easy access. You can down KGB Road. A lot of people still commute to Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
That's our big connection with Anchorage. Our flow of workers going in every day to work
right.
in Anchorage, and so they could jump right on and head in, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly the drive time, but I'd guess an hour each way.
Yeah, I have a colleague that does it
and,
every day from
Imagine
Citizen Kinnick.
Yeah. This time of the year when it's getting darker and you get this snow and icy roads, I guess was a tough day Monday.
Yeah. Yes, it, and, obviously it was,
so,
yeah.
So a lot of commuters and that population, and so it's just moving farther south, mm-hmm. and the population of the borough is moving west, too.
Oh.
And so you're looking at Big Lake growth. Meadow Lakes is like 7,000-8,000 people,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is just north of the Parks Highway, getting on your way to Houston.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that huge area.
I went up to Les Brake's garden in Willow.
Isn't that beautiful?
It was beautiful. And people I met there were Anchorage retirees who were moving into Willow. And they'd had maybe recreational spot there, but then they finally sold their Anchorage stuff and just made it their home. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been on the garden tour several times, our dog
are,
farm.
Are you?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, so
yeah.
it's kind of yeah. a, it's kind of fun. Really? Les Brake, and there's 4 or 5 gardeners, 7, 8 in Willow that are incredible.
Yeah.
And so that's
a
fun part
of
the summer.
And they had a fabulous guy up there, Dan Hinckley, I think, that mm-hmm. was a speaker who goes all over the world. And he was a friend of Les's,
right.
and so he gave a talk there and kind of a fundraiser mm-hmm. for the Willow Garden.
It's a lot of fun.
So cool. Okay. So have we discussed how large it is, or should there? I let's see. We also incorporated in '64, I think.
Is it? The borough.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. You know, the borough is a second class. We're not, you know, the powers of the borough, you know. In Anchorage, you have the strong mayor and assembly working together
right.
in unison. And up there, we have a manager.
Form of government.
Assembly form of government with a weak mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I mean weak mayor, the mayor can vote, break ties at mm-hmm. assembly meetings, or you have veto power. And the assembly could hire the borough manager, the borough clerk, and the borough attorney. And, of course, the manager and their staff hires everybody else. So it's a little different form of government
right.
than down here in Anchorage.
I mean, so how do you position yourself? I mean, you were on the assembly for 2 terms, so you're new. You're not
right.
new to sort of
mm-hmm.
borough government and all that. But, why did you want to be mayor? What was
I was 4 years planning commission, which mm-hmm. is a step below the assembly. That's an appointee.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran for District 7, which would be our west-north region all the way up to actually, we go all the way to Broad Pass, District 7, all the way
really?
To Squintna, if people can imagine that.
Broad Pass, just on the way to McKinley?
Yes, that's where the line is for the borough. And so that's all my country, District 7.
Yeah.
So District 7's a very large, very diverse group, Talkeetna,
mm-hmm.
Petersville,
yeah.
Trapper Creek, Willow, Houston, and things like that.
Wow.
So I was on there 6 years, and that's where you really do cut your teeth on all the issues and that budgets. I felt like I got really good at working and fashioning budgets over the years.
I was wondering if you thought your law background prepared you.
Well, I think
for this.
It helps a little bit, you know. Uh-huh. We have a great borough attorney, Nick Spiropoulos,
mm-hmm.
and just almost totally rely on him for legal
mm-hmm.
issues.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't practice law now, so I can't step in and say this.
Yeah,
this is how we go on that. But
yeah.
I think it helps a little bit. It hones your skills.
Think, just absorbing the material, understanding.
You know, I was a magistrate district court judge. You know, the one thing I learned quite early in that is to listen. And there's two sides to every story, and pay attention. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you read the pleadings in the file, and then all of a sudden everybody starts talking. It's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think that helps a little bit.
Yeah, I think listening is perhaps a lost art.
It's a good thing.
It's something you bring into this. And speaking of listening, how do you get out to listen to your constituents? I mean, we just talked about how big this place is.
Well, I'm carrying 2 cell phones right now, which is just horrible. my life is gone. You know, we have public hearings, and so if the issue, people are going to come in and testify. You're going to get calls. When I was an assembly member, I thought the best way to go was to go to every community council meeting that you could go to.
Mm-hmm.
And we have road service areas and fire service areas. So
right.
that was the mission of every assembly member. And I think we have 2 new assembly members. And if I was going to give them advice, I'd say go to the community council meetings. learn to listen, find out what they're thinking, and bring it back to the assembly so
right.
that you
Which
can
is,
actively.
Those are like 7 to 9 at night, right?
Yeah.
Thursday night
or
something like that. I mean, it's extracurricular sorts, but it's very valuable.
And these communities are quite diverse. You know, mm-hmm. They're small, but they're 503 nonprofit organizations, and they have little bits of budgets, and they're trying to be active, kind of grown.
They're trying to protect
their
space
lifestyle and their communities.
I just want to remind folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Vern Halter, who is the new mayor of the Mat-Su Borough, longtime Iditarod musher and winner of the Yukon Quest and an attorney from South Dakota, now retired. We're going to talk about Pilates. He does Pilates too. But we also have Patty Sullivan in the studio with us. And Patty and I, a long time ago when we were children, we worked for the Anchorage Daily News together, but not in the same area. I was in features. You were in news.
That's
and
right.
then you headed up to the Mat-Su and did news for
KSKA for 6 years.
Yep, for
the
six
Valley
years.
Bureau.
I remember listening to your stories and thinking, what a great person to be doing. You know, it's just great.
Thank you.
And I want to ask you how you chose Mat-Su. Your family was up there. You guys... How did you?
You know, I hate to admit, we were out of the bush, actually. Well, okay, first Northern California and Canada, and then we wound up in Bethel, and then we fantasized about arriving in Anchorage, and then hate to say it, but we laughed about going out to Mat-Su, right? We thought it was wild and crazy, and then we went out there, and it's the land
beautiful
of
lifestyle,
beautiful land of grit.
Yeah,
you know, people are tough and independent interesting.
Yeah.
And so
and you stayed.
Stayed for, I guess, 18 years.
Wow. Yeah. What part of the valley do you live in?
Well, I was in Palmer and Wasilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And
sides.
Vern, you're in Willow, right?
I'm in Willow. Palmer is, I love Palmer. Palmer is our ag town, our ag history, the colonists.
Yeah, the tale of two cities.
When you drive into Palmer, just it always just makes me feel good. That's our seat of government, too. That's where the borough government is.
Mm-hmm.
So we
it
go
is
down
nice.
To meetings, and it's beautiful. And it still has that farm flavor and trying to figure out how to protect and save the farmland in a developing, we're a growing borough. That's another big issue.
We are going to talk about that. Yeah, definitely. So. I mean, how do you do it? And, you know, I've often heard people say, even about Anchorage, that it doesn't know it's urbanizing. It doesn't know that it's – so every time a tree goes down, people get upset, but they have to actually realize this is an urbanizing – we are urbanizing, and you want the services, you want the amenities. This is what – you know, you want the road through to the hospital, and it's – but you sort of moved to Alaska.
Right.
So you're thinking that – I don't know. It's hard to have change. Change is hard.
We've definitely got that out there with some of our new beautiful roads, Bogard Road and Selden Road Extension. Selden was cutting through – it looked like a pioneer road.
Right.
I mean, it was beautiful trees, and the road itself is absolutely wonderful.
Bogart, our new expressway, leaving Palmer. So now not the Palmer-Wasilla Highway. See, what happened was our population grew so fast, so quickly, then all these roads and schools didn't keep up with it. So we had, and that was a major thing that happened the last 5 or 6 years is the building road bonds and school bonds that we had to float, and they're all coming to fruition now. So 5 new schools, 14 new road projects built in the last 3-4 years.
Wow, it's like you're building Alaska out there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody at Anchorage, too, they're going to drive through Wasilla. They're going to go up to their cabins and things like that. Like leaving Wasilla, you got the Parks Highway on a 3-phase project to get them out to Big Lake.
Right. Right.
Down KGB.
Right.
Some of the numbers. In 2014, we did $50 million in school construction, $60 million in school construction for this year. For roads, we did $50 million in 2014 and $30 million this year.
So tell me where the money comes from.
Those were our 2011 road and school bonds. We put it in front of the Mat-Su voters.
Okay.
And so the road bonds were $64 million. It was a 50-50 match with the state. So the state put in $32 million, and we put in $32 million. And the voters, it was heavy in favor of it by the voters. And then the school bond was $214 million to build these 5 new schools and new football stadiums and things like that. That's a 70-30 match with the state. So the state paid 70% of the costs, and the borough residents paid 30%. So that was
Great.
That was great.
Did you guys, there was something about the state sort of stepping back from that. Did you get caught in that at all?
No, we didn't.
Uh-huh.
Patty probably knows more about it.
No,
I think Anchorage had a bond that may have been kind of back and forth. And I think it actually passed eventually without the match.
Right.
The state the state legislature put a 5-year moratorium on matching bonds for, so it puts you on notice as they go through their fiscal studies and what they're doing right now.
Yeah. Let me throw out our numbers again. I meant to do that when we came back. 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's see. What do I want to talk about? Looking at my list here. We talked about the management form of government. You had your first council, well, your first official everybody seated council. How did that feel?
That was Tuesday night. Well, I was a little nervous going in because, you know, it's a fairly lengthy agenda and the book is quite long, you know, and I was amazed. When I was a assembly member, I sit down there and the mayor's running the meeting and the clerks are running the meeting and you just wait, you know, and if you have to say something, raise your hand. But when you're mayor, you're running the meeting, right?
Yeah, if you kind of fall asleep, everybody's looking at you, right?
You get the Robert's Rules of Order and everything that you're supposed to be following. But I thought the meeting went well. We were finished by, I think, 9 o'clock, 6 o'clock start, which is good.
Yeah, it's early.
It's good to get people home.
Yeah, and Patty, I noticed you do these Q&As, or not even a Q&A, but just right after the meeting, you do a sort of an audio
podcast.
Are you going to continue that?
We are. We're going to re-energize it.
News to Vern, but this is practice for you on the radio.
I think we'll put the borough manager and the mayor, Vern Halter, together, and I'll act as foil and try to keep them laughing, yet educating folks, and keep it under, perhaps, if we're lucky, 5 minutes.
And maybe we'll do it once a month, so there'd be two assembly meetings, and you have issues of importance. Mm-hmm, you know, there's a lot of consent agenda things that, you know, but, you know, some of the important issues that come through the legislation that we could talk about.
You know, I do sense we were talking about the support for the growth, and yet many people don't want to see that growth. I mean, so are there various constituents out there, some that really are pro-growth and some that are like, stop. And how do you get them all going in the same direction?
Well, growth, I think growth is inevitable in a way in many, in the sense of things. And our growth in the Valley, it's really a beautiful place to live. And so housing is reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm. That's the big thing.
So people are still moving in with family size. They can have a beautiful, affordable home. The lot sizes are considerably bigger. Then, you know, so you got a little bit of space to live in, and you may have to commute to work. But our jobs are starting to increase in the Mat-Su borough, so you can stay right there. We just did a great piece of legislation yesterday. We'll have a new 40 acute housing units right next to the hospital up there.
Kind of assisted living
elderly care?
Elderly care, things like that. Those are good jobs, high-paying jobs, and so.
Do you have anything about how many commute in and how many work? And I didn't.
Well, Patty may
I didn't
have
cue
that.
You.
I used to have that memorized, and I feel like it's changed. I feel like it's gone
shifting.
Up a little, but I probably shouldn't throw it.
Well, whether there's any commute in the other direction too.
Well, the traffic is steady. You know, you go in the morning. You know, my wife Susan would go down to Eagle River to work at Ravenwood Vet Clinic. You know, it's a steady, heavy traffic, and you could, when I notice it is on Friday afternoons. It's just, you know, the Wasilla is just full of people. Of course, they may be going to their cabins and things like that too, or coming home. So,
I just really feel like if people don't get off that Parks Highway, they don't really know.
Yeah, exactly.
Mat-Su.
All our road bond projects were aimed to get people off the Parks Highway and to get people off the Glen Highway and go east, west, and north, south.
Yeah.
And so, if you look at how those bonds were lined and how they were put, we worked on the north south connect to KGB Road. Clap and Vine Road and Hawk Lane, and then at the same time this new corridor. I think it's the largest corridor, largest funded project, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Something like $30 million.
East west, all the way from Palmer, all the way basically to Houston to Pittman.
Wow,
you wouldn't have to be on the Parks Highway.
It takes people off the very congested Palmer-Wasilla Highway, which during the fair and actually recently, every single afternoon after school, there was a fender bender or multiple within a few minutes.
Yeah.
And now you come in, you could come in on that road past Colony High School and went in the new high schools and past Palmer High School, a few blocks up from the Palmer-Wasilla Highway. And it is a beautiful view coming in because you're kind of going downhill, sloping downhill, and you're looking at Pioneer Peak.
I love that view of Pioneer Peak.
It'll make you feel good.
Yeah.
So, that road.
Well, listen, we got to take a break. So if you're listening, this is Vern Halter, the new mayor of Mat-Su Borough, and Patty Sullivan, who's the director of public affairs and an emergency announcement.
That's right. Information during emergencies.
Yes. Okay. And you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today our topic is all things Matsu, where we have the mayor of the Matsu Borough, Vern Halter, familiar name to all of us. Certainly we know him from mushing stories and mushing adventures, but he's actually been a businessman out in the Valley for 30 years, and he also has served on the zoning and planning. We talked about that, and then two terms on the assembly for District 7, which goes from Broad Pass to Willow.
Back down to Houston, Meadow Lakes.
He's the new mayor, and he did say that his first meeting, he was a little nervous at his first meeting, but you don't look nervous to me, Vern.
Thank you.
So we're going to we definitely welcome your calls at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or we can also take an email at hometownalaskapublic.org. So some of the things that I was thinking about, we've talked a little bit about growth already and the schools. There was one story I told you guys when we were getting ready for the show. I read about it. I think it was in the Frontiersman, and I might have linked to it on our website, but it was like they were anticipating a down. There were new schools. Did you say five new schools opened?
Five.
I know that there was the Reddington Senior. This was the story, and that they decided to scale back the anticipated numbers. And what happened was double showed up. And so there's just a lot of young kids in the Matsu. Right. And you were planning. I mean, you have been planning for this to some degree.
Well, our school population, I think, is about 18,000.
Yeah.
And then every year at budget time, you know, they're going to come up with their numbers for the next year, and they're going to project out what growth is. And I think they had it at about 375 more students for this year. And then when it actually came in, I think their numbers are up about 750.
Right.
It just came in way higher.
We read the same story.
And they built Joe Reddington Senior High School, middle school, to hold about 600 or 700, so it's already full.
It's at capacity, opened. Yeah.
But the number of new students is spread throughout the borough, so don't think that it's all in that one area.
Right. And we were just talking, you know, you said there was one study that said some are coming from Anchorage, some are coming from around the state.
They said the school district did a little bit of a preliminary look at it, and they thought a third from Anchorage, a third from the lower 48, and a third from the rest of the state are moving into the borough.
Yeah.
And growth is, you know, and we're looking at some of these statistics. Matsu schools grew 6% in Anchorage, -5 the past 5 years. And Fairbanks, they 1% decline, and Juneau, 3% decline. So we're the only place in the state that you're seeing that growth of population and students.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And that number is very high. Having watched the Matsu for 18 years, we've always grown by nearly a school every year, but to grow by 700 kids in 1 year is pretty striking.
And so to keep up overcrowding, you know, because Wasilla High School, for an example, was built for, I think, many, many years ago for 750 students and was up to about 1,400. And, of course, they got portables out there, too. And so you build the Joe Reddington Senior High School and you find out, well, we're already full again. And so that's what happens with growth. So trying to stop that overcrowding in your classrooms and provide the funding to build the schools and staffing and things like that.
It's amazing. It does make me think that with that concentration of population, services are going to come out there. I mean, do you ever think about a rail line? Does that ever come up for you guys between Matsu and, I mean, I know it's the Alaska Railroad and it's a quasi-governmental independent body, but
mass transit, you know, is a big issue, and how to move people, you know, everybody's driving their cars to work and back, and
those
then having other forms of transit to back that up. And the railroad, you know, sounds like an ideal situation, but I don't think the numbers pencil out for having a commuter line or, you know, high speed like you see people going to work out in the East Coast.
Don't have the population base for it.
You know, it'd be a wonderful thing, but it might be unlikely looking at the numbers.
At least in our lifetime.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Speaking of growth, here's a Neil Fried stat. Matsu builds a third of all housing in the state, yet we've only got 13% of the population. And that's from 2014.
Wow. So. I saw that you guys are having a sort of planning fiscal November 13th. Something's happening with Neil Fried. That's what reminded me of it. There's some kind of a come and get schooled up on the financial.
There's a demographic meeting, but there's also a state-sponsored meeting.
Friday night, the governor's got his staff coming up. I think even the attorney general and probably the commissioner of revenue and on the rollout of his new financial plan. You know,
This is the thing I think I saw. And I think November 13th.
They're going to take testimony from. They're going to be at Teeland School, middle school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm betting there will be a lot of people come out to give testimony in that.
Right. And what are they going to say? Are they going
to? Well, they want to change the permanent fund into an endowment and secure funding over the years to come. And you know, so it'll have positive reviews and it'll probably have some people that are wondering about the results.
Well, I think people, I mean, I sat through one of the university is having all the existing Anchorage mayors come in and give a talk, and Libby Roderick's dad, Jack Roderick, he gave a talk, and one of the people in the audience said, "Well, gosh, we had that downturn in the 80s. Why didn't we diversify then?" And Jack was like, "Well, I'm not really sure, but there's always been enough money. And, you know, they really, really, we didn't have to." And then people said, "Well, I don't think it's going to be as bad this time as it was because, well, for example, look at the thriving native corporations we have that have really changed the landscape." And so there was a lot of discussion about that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, the downturn in the 80s may have been a little different cause.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a huge construction project, you know, a multi-billion-dollar construction project with all the people, all the jobs, all the housing and everything that fuels that, and all of a sudden that goes away or declines.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is just caused by there's less oil going into the pipeline and the price of oil has dropped drastically from to where it is right now, $48 a barrel, and a little different scenario.
Yeah.
We're more sophisticated. I think we're more diverse already than we were then.
Right. I think so, too.
Maybe we're used to it mentally. Maybe a little tougher.
I also think the quality of life actually has value for people.
Exactly.
They are willing to do with less if they still maintain the quality of life.
I think you got to credit Governor Walker for trying to, you know, get the legislature and the state of Alaska to look at it. He's had big meetings in Fairbanks and around the state on this issue.
Pull and people kicking and screaming to deal with it.
You know, because, you know, we leave us alone.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that how governments looked at a lot of ways?
Right, right.
And send the permanent fund
and let us
forget about it.
Yeah. I liked your description. I think it was actually an Ellen Lockyer, but you described yourself as, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, I'm a centrist conservative coalition builder, and you can converse with the
deputy. Well, I've never, you know, I grew up in South Dakota, a pretty conservative state, maybe even more so than Alaska, especially the Mat-Su Valley is notoriously conservative. You know, but I've never been in a political party, and I've always enjoyed that. I like the idea of looking at facts and issues from a standpoint of trying to solve it and come up with the best decision you can based on the—
Yeah, and I looked at your reasons for running, and you were really supportive of schools, and that isn't always the case in the Valley. That is not from some of our state legislators. That is not their.
Well, I don't know. Susan and I, we don't have any children, but you know, I felt lucky for the school system. For me, I went to a country school. All 8 grades were in one room for 8 years, and you know, but we knew the 3 R's, and everybody in my class. We were the biggest class in the county, 5. Everybody went on to do very well and then went to university, high school, university, and then went back to law school, which is one of the things my mother wanted really bad was, you know, so I feel like education kind of made me. And
But your version of education can be somewhat fundamental.
Yeah.
I mean, the basics, the, you know.
But I hate to see arts and music go by the wayside. Anytime you get in a fiscal crisis, let's cut.
And
I think that's the wrong message myself personally.
Yeah, right.
I think there's more to that, and it benefits people and the students more.
Yeah. What do you have in the way of arts out in the Mat-Su?
Well,
I know you've got some theater.
We have a new theater at the college. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And you've got some theater company. Valley Performing Arts
has really talented people.
Do you have?
In the schools, you know, they have the same arts programs. I'm thinking that you have in Anchorage.
And then popular culture. You know, you've got those coffee houses out there. And
espresso stands.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I love that.
We can't go any place without our espresso stands in the Mat-Su Borough.
And they have to be drive-in.
They got to be drive-in,
drive-through.
They got to be quick.
Yeah.
We have the offbeat movie, Moose the Movie.
Yeah.
Right. Which we've lost the film incentive thing here in the state, which I know
that was sad.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah, I keep thinking people are all going to move here when it gets hotter in the lower 48. Even if we don't have snow, they're still going to move here because it'll be cooler. Right? I don't know. We'll see. I want to talk about salmon. One of the things that you guys have been working on is making sure your salmon streams are healthy. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, salmon, you know, all five major species have always been in all our streams up in, you know, Willow. You know, we're just famous for salmon runs, and and you got all the species coming back. And then there's been a slow, steady decline of the kings and silvers and every species over the years, last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a lot of different reasons. So we've been working on restocking those rivers. And I know silver salmon was a huge success last year.
Yeah.
All of the guides and things like that and friends, it was, you know, they're back in Little Sioux and back in.
It's hard to know exactly what's, you know, it's bigger than just us, you know, or overfishing or, but there's many things, acidification, all kinds of things that might be flowing in there, but you're doing what you can to try to.
You know, you've got the pike moving into the valley streams and lakes. That's you know, you've got a lot of issues, but one of the main ones is all our runs are coming up through the Cook Inlet, and they're coming to our streams. They got to get into our streams. And so there's a lot of back and forth about that issue of if they're not getting here or they are getting here and having a corridor. In the last few years, they've allowed a corridor for our fish or different fishing down in the Cook Inlet to allow them to get up here, and it's been noticeable success.
So we have a volunteer Fish and Wildlife Commission with some real experts on there. One of them, Larry Engel, was former chair of the Alaska Board of Fisheries. Howard Delo was a member on the Board of Fisheries as both biologists. Jennifer Eamon, lots of great mental strength on that group, and they're just volunteers. Mm-hmm. And at the last Board of Fisheries meeting, they had a tremendous success. Mm-hmm. The Board of Fish agreed unanimously to, you know, support what they recommended, which was to change the commercial regulations for drift net fleets and allow some of those northern bound fish to pass north. They altered where they could fish and how they could fish. Mm-hmm. And in the last two summers, we've had an uptick in silvers on Fish Creek and the Little Susitna River. Mm-hmm. And we do see a connection there, and we're hoping to maintain that change.
You know, right. Well, that's good.
The Mat-Su, you know, the fishing guides and all the lodges out on the rivers, you know, you talk about the Squintna River and the Yentna River and the Talkeetna River, and, you know, they really get affected, and whether or not they're going to have business and having people come and tourists to go fishing, that's a huge business aspect for the Mat-Su Borough, and that should never be understated, because a lot of people think, well, if you're a commercial fisherman, that's make the money, and everybody else is just...
Yeah.
But it's a big business interest in the Mat-Su Borough.
Right,
that we need to protect.
The small business.
Yeah, exactly, because it affects the families and, of course, the grocery stores and the restaurants and the gas stations where these people are spending money.
Yeah.
If the fish go away, they go away.
Right.
Well, and our plea to the board was that we have 8 stocks of concern, and that's a designated term for species that aren't doing well enough to sustain themselves. It's kings and one sockeye stock. And so our commission took that plea to the board and said, you know, help us. Let's change some things and let some northern bound fish get through those nets.
And that's good. And so, is that going to continue? You said it's 2 years now. You've
well, that'll be. I think they have annual meetings or semi-annual meetings with the Board of Fisheries.
2017.
And so that meeting upcoming, there's a little bit of concern with us that they some of the people want to hold that meeting down in Kenai, and we want to have it in a neutral place like Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. Population center.
You know, and it might even be our turn in the Mat-Su Valley to hold that meeting, because this will be the second time for Kenai where we've never had one.
Kenai, 18 years ago, and supposedly police were required to escort board members and ADF&G staff.
It's touchy. It's very touchy. Because,
fish,
you know,
politics
people...
are intense in Alaska.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
But it's great to hear the news that you sort of had some uptick
in... Two summers of success with silvers. And we don't want it to not be mentioned that sports fishing is lucrative. It does add some punch to the economy, just as commercial fishing does. 2007, $118 million by sports anglers was spent in the Matsu, and in Upper Cook Inlet, $700 million.
Wow.
$700 million.
Yeah, that's great.
So it's a lot. It's big numbers.
It's a big economy. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time, 550-8433. I think they just want to listen to you, Vern. They really don't want to challenge you.
Right.
550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We must talk a little bit about Port McKenzie, right?
Get me it.
And where are we on the rail, the 32-mile rail?
Well, the rail is we're building a segment right now, and then we need funding, $120 million, to complete the project. It's a phase project, so getting, you know, it's up and going. We've got the corridor. So we need to finish the project, and we need to finish it as quick as possible.
Right, because go ahead, Patty.
I'm just going to say we have the rail embankment all but one segment, and one segment is finishing right now, and we do need funding next summer. We will run out of construction dollars.
So and the point is that this brings what to the port?
Well, you're going to connect the commercial aspect of the railroad straight down to Port McKenzie, which would allow us, you could have product coming into Port McKenzie, and then, of course, product coming back out of the port, you know, pipe and things like that, LNG,
right.
and that movement north. So it's quicker, it's shorter. There's actually studies that shows it how much it'll save save in cost of moving of goods and materials.
And that port is so deep. The water is so deep there, 41 feet or something.
The largest vessels in the world can pull up there.
And,
there's also two LNG companies that are courting us at Port McKenzie. REI is the Japanese company that is seeking to export natural gas from Cook Inlet to Japan, and there's also Westpac Midstream, which is seeking both routes. And Westpac could use Port Mac Rail to transport LNG north to the interior. And
it goes both directions.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. And Alaska Railroad was just given permission. I think it's the only railroad in the United States that's given permission to haul liquid LNG.
Really?
So that would be a huge thing. So that'd come out of the port. So that would almost ensure that PacWest would exist.
Yeah.
Then REI is, you know, a Japanese company that's coming over here and wants to work. They want to buy separate land and they be brought into the port and ship over to the market.
Now, I saw in what I was skimming material something about a Port McKenzie town site. Is that a plan to have homes there, or what is that?
Well, I guess it'd be a planned city, or you'd know where the city was, and that causes a little turmoil in people's minds. Like, it's just an area that basically, with the borough owns the land, it'd be set aside for a home site or a future town.
Okay.
And really, to me, you should leave it up to the private developers and sell, you know, sell the lands off or subdivide it and as are needed and things like that. So. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't read too much into it.
Okay, I hadn't come across it before.
People in the borough sometimes do
get excited.
Scares them.
Yeah,
and you know there is a community council down there too. That you know I think if you take input from them and how they want to develop it, based on would be the best way, the best approach.
Yeah. You know what are some of the? I know we talked about growth. That's obviously a big issue, but aside from that, I'm thinking about marijuana becoming legal. Is that an issue in the valley? What are the common discussions and concerns that might not make it to Anchorage that we would hear about, but that people there really care about?
One or two of the cities, Palmer, and I'm thinking Houston may have had it on this ballot, where, you know, commercialization would not be legal, let the voters decide. And I think there may be one on the borough ballot a year from now. And on that
so
it's still an
unsettled.
Active issue up there. We do have a marijuana advisory board that the assembly started, 15, 16 members to come in and look at issues. And basically, I think the best approach is to let the state of Alaska go through their regulations and come down with their regulations. And, you know, I know they're looking at Colorado and Washington and come up with that. And I get the fear of sales and things like that. You just have to make sure you understand the regulations. But, you know, it was a statewide initiative, and it did pass.
Right.
You know, and
there's a fact there.
There's a fact there.
I was listening to some higher ed people, and they were saying that the Colorado universities had a 30% growth in their application rate because of their, so maybe there's an upside here that we haven't been considering.
There's upsides and downsides. I think it's how you regulate it. You know, we have a new marijuana board. In the state of Alaska, run by a prosecutor, former prosecutor, I should say. And so, You know, I think you just, you know, it's just like alcohol. You know, I imagine at one, you know, point in time, but if you have rules and regulations and how it's handled, it may be better. Yeah. You know, I was a public defender and a judge, you know, and sometimes I think there was people who were sent to jail that quite honestly should not have because of marijuana. And and I hate to see it go black market again or under the table. It seems like that causes just as much turmoil for the...
Right. I guess I mentioned it because the Valley was known for a quality of marijuana, right? That we won't mention on the radio.
I won't mention the name.
But, I mean, I've thought, well, why not tap that commercially anyway? I mean, if it's going to be there, you know. But I know a lot of people don't
agree. That's the direction it's probably going. But, you know, it's going to take some years to...
Yeah. One thing I wanted to... I when I knew I was going to have you guys on the show, I talked to my friends who live in the Valley and said, what's on your mind? And one of them says, well, my taxes are really high. So you and I talked about that on the phone. And, you know, they made the assumption or they made the link, oh, it's the ferry or, you know, what are we paying for? And you said, well, let's straighten that out. So let's talk about that.
Taxes, we have property taxes, residential property taxes. Really, the difference between the borough and Anchorage is you have a huge commercial base for taxation, too. And we're lighter on that. And so maybe the port and the railroad spur line and all these things, the railroad spur line is not based on property taxes. It's based on state funding and of course, the borough's managing the project along with the railroad to build it. And so there's no taxes at all. In fact, there probably could be a little bit of an argument that it reduces your taxes because the borough has 5% administrative fees, which would go into our general fund. So that's actually the prison up there. Goose Bay Prison, that was
prison.
A huge, that's costing it. That doesn't cost a dime of borough property taxes. That was all state funding. It was another program that was managed by the borough. We did all the letting of the contracts and bids, and it was it's a beautiful place. And, of course, I don't know how many jobs came from that, but hundreds were relocated there in a state-of-the-art facility. So, but it did not affect your property taxes one iota.
So people don't know that.
That's true.
Seem not to know that,
But you're... All of your services, your road service areas, your fire service areas, our area-wide mill rate, and that would include your schools. So if we have a mill rate of 9.9, about 6.1 of that's going to schools, which is good, I think. That's a big part of our taxes.
Yeah.
Another thing, the ferry, you mentioned the ferry. At one time, that was a free boat. and maybe that's, you know, I spent 6 years on the assembly, and I guess that was the most frustrating part was... We had all, you know, the boat was already being built, and they turned it over to the borough, I think my first or second meeting or something like that. And every sense, there wasn't a place to dock it in Anchorage, and there wasn't a place to dock it over there. And it's just been a turmoil, but we've got it sold.
You did get it sold. I don't know if I knew that.
The good news, too, is we have federal approval. We had to have federal approval to sell it to the Philippine Red Cross, and that's, we received federal.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so they'll actually use it as a ship in a hospital over in the Philippines. So that's a...
Oh, that's good. It's a good outcome.
That's a bright spot.
Yeah. They have 7,107 Philippine islands.
Isn't that amazing? So this would be perfect.
Hundreds of maritime wrecks every year.
Right. Well, we have a call, and I'm going to welcome Carl. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hey, good afternoon. I just wanted to call in and make a few comments. My name is Carl Schleich, and I was a school principal out in the Valley for 23 years.
Oh.
I want to congratulate Mayor Halter on his election to being mayor and honor him for his approach as a nonpartisan. I think that's really appropriate. And, you know, the borough is supposed to be set up to be a nonpartisan kind of a race, and yet that's not what it always is as we watch elections take place. And I want to just maybe also make a little plug for the role of government. A lot of times during the time that we lived in the Valley, you would hear a lot of naysayers and criticisms of government, and yet there's some things that only government can do. And I appreciate the support of the new mayor with the schools out there. I moved to Palmer, Wasilla, in 1990 when we opened up Colony Middle School. Colony Middle School and Colony High School were both built with 90 cents on the dollar during the recession. It was probably the best time that we could have built schools. And even during that time, why are we building these big, massive schools? We don't need these Taj Mahals.
And look what happened.
I know. Where would we have been without those two schools and the other schools that are now coming online? So there's always a role for government to be able to have a forum where we can talk about things in an open and honest way. You know, the state, we've been very lucky in Alaska to have oil money to be able to pay for so much of these projects. And I think we're coming into a time where it's going to be a little bit different. And those of us who are taxpayers need to really appreciate the role that we can play in supporting schools and roads, police, troopers, all of those aspects. I just wish the Borough Assembly, and thank Mayor DeFilippis for his previous service. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not fun being in that hot seat.
No, it is not.
I'm grateful for people are willing to do that.
Yeah.
And wish Mayor Halter and the rest of the Assembly the best of luck as they move forward, which is probably going to be some challenging times as the Valley continues to grow.
Yeah. Well, Carl, thank you so much. Appreciate your phone call. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I remember when I was, we only have about, 2 minutes or so, but I was thinking about what issues are going to tackle you, what issues are you going to tackle, but what issues are going to tackle you, you know, like what's the boogeyman out there for you? Well, and we only have about a minute and a half or so.
You know, having people sit in traffic jams on a, you know, trying to go to work or trying to get back from work or trying to go to school or something.
Yeah.
I think it's very frustrating. And then you're in a downward spiral on your fiscal process in Juneau and money.
That's
and things
scary.
Like that. Money's tight.
Mm-hmm.
And, and property taxes are difficult for people. I've never met a person that likes to pay property taxes.
Right.
You know, so
right.
we have to keep our property taxes low. At the same time, we got to handle this growth.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one.
Well, I know in some of your, you know, when you're running for mayor, you said what'll get us through this is core values and it's like leadership. And I mean, this is a time for leaders to come forward, you know. And I mean, I don't know. I never did ask you why you really ran for mayor. What got you to run for mayor? Because you've been in the Assembly. Was it just, I mean, I don't think you're on a career path for, you know. I could say
in April, I was not going to run for mayor. We had a kind of an issue up in Willow about fire service area and raising the mill rate. And I raised the mill rate because I thought it was needed, and it caused some sort of a backlash. But, you know, I had several assembly members kept asking me that you should run and things like that, and other people. And then I basically just decided, okay, I'll throw my hat in there.
It's time.
I feel comfortable with the budget. I feel comfortable being on the assembly for 6 years and know the parties. We have a good assembly now.
Yeah,
and
we
have a diverse assembly too. People are talking about Republican or Democrat or Independent. We've got both parties representative, but I do believe the nonpartisan approach is by far the best.
It's refreshing to hear people talk about it, you know, and I hope we can go there. I think people will pay attention more.
You know, and I wanted this gentleman that just called in, the principal, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge and the Oakland Bay Bridge are built in the 30s at the worst economic times in history. And you start to think about, you know, sometimes you could do things when it's a little tougher. And I think that's a good reminder to us nowadays.
That don't panic.
Don't give up. Right. Don't panic. You know.
Yeah. Settle down. Yeah.
You can't let your economy go to heck just because you totally withdraw because you're, and that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. Yeah. Or people just leaving, you know, just giving up.
Well, if there's no jobs, if there's no contractors, no contracts being let and things like that.
People
have
to leave.
Something's got to happen.
I don't want to end on a downer.
Okay.
I mean,
I've got a quick memory of Vern at the beginning of the Sockeye fire and rapidly. We were on fire. The fire was jumping the park's highway. It was frightening. And Vern was earnest, and he got in there and said, he had sincere regard for the community and said, get me the governor. I just saw that as true leadership.
He give you
not campaigning,
but
wanting to protect Willow and surrounding areas.
He declared that a disaster quicker than any other disaster. He took one flyover.
Wow. Well, that's a better note to end on. So thank you, Vern Halter and Patty Sullivan, for coming on Hometown Alaska today. Next week, I'll be back as your host. We're going to deal with human trafficking in Alaska. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer today. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.